welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program this week. Our guest is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. And just a reminder, as always, that we would love to have your participation on today's program. These Ask the Mayor shows always go even better whenever you, the public, are part of them. So there are a number of ways, of course, that you can get your questions to the mayors on our show. And so your questions for Mayor Rozworski today can be called in to 765-496-1999, can be sent via email to ask@wbaa.org. And of course, you can always tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter anytime during this first airing of the show today. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon. Nice to see you as always.
Hey, Stan, how are you today?
Not too bad.
Great.
Let me start with a couple of listener questions that have come in since you were last on the show. We got one from Ikuko, who says he lives in Lafayette, and he says, many Lafayette residents, including myself, have noticed the water bill due dates are being pulled in every month, that's his term, by at least 2 to 3 days this year. He says at this pace, we, the water consumer, will end up paying 13 monthly bills instead of 12 for the year 2017. The measured portion of the bill, such as the water itself and the sewer charge, may not be problematic with this situation, he says, but monthly components of the bill, like the residential stormwater charge of $5, might result in overcharges. And he wants to know if you're aware of this and whether there might be a remedy to this situation.
Sure. First of all, thank you. Yes. You know, we put out information in the utility billing several months ago talking about this situation, and actually you won't pay 13 bills. You only will pay 12. If they go back and recalculate from when we first notify them, they will see that they went a month where they didn't actually pay a bill, and by the end of the year, they will actually only have paid 12 bills, just like would normally be. We did the switch over this year to the Tyler Munis, to the new program that we're doing, and because of that, we do about 33,000 bills a month, and because of that, there is obviously a timing issue that takes place, and we can't read that many meters that all the bills go out at once. The bills go out in sets. We have 5 sets that bills go out at different weeks, and then over the period of the month, and then over the period of the year that everybody gets billed those 12 bills. And so what was going to happen with the way that loop, that some of those sets, those people were going to get 2 bills within a week of each other. So to make sure that didn't happen, we created that gap so nobody would get a bill stacked on top of them, and then we began to creep. He's absolutely correct. We began to creep that due date by a small percentage each month, so by the end of the year, everybody would have paid 12 bills. Nobody would have got a bill stacked on top of each other. Excuse me. And then going into 2018, that will go back to your normal to the due date that you have, and that date will stay the same every month. So it's simply a product of switching over to that new system. But I can guarantee you nobody's going to pay an extra bill.
All right. Well, we've had another question come in. This one is from Phil, who writes, after the intersection of 52 and 26 was reopened, I noticed the railroad crossing near the post office was not upgraded. He says, this crossing is bad in both directions. I hit it every day going to and from work, and I have put off doing work on the front end of my car specifically to wait for this crossing upgrade. And he says, based on an earlier version of Ask the Mayor, my understanding was that the crossing would be fixed when the intersection was addressed. He says, did I misunderstand, and who maintains that crossing?
Yeah, no, he's absolutely correct. That was our goal, to work with the railroad to get that railroad crossing done at that time. But a couple things happened. One, that did not fit into the railroad's schedule to get that done, and so that will be fixed as this project moves on. That will be fixed, that along with the railroad crossing there closer to Earl Avenue, the railroad crossing out by Farabee, those all will be upgraded as part of this project. The other piece of that happened was, as you remember, we originally were going to close that intersection for 90 days, and we came up with a way that we only ended up closing it for 28 days and scheduled and segmented the work a little bit longer because we just felt the 90-day was going to be too difficult on the businesses and cause too many different problems, and so we found a way to reduce that, but we didn't do the exact same amount of scope of work either. So I understand his concern, and we certainly understand it and appreciate it, and it will be upgraded. It just couldn't be done in that 20-day window and coordinating with the railroad. The way that works is, even though that is a railroad crossing, we have to pay for that. It has to be engineered, submittals to the railroad, and then they they put that work into their kind of overall construction schedule that they have for the entire United States, and it's got to be all coordinated. And we do our best working with them to coordinate that at the exact same times other things are happening. But, I mean, the reality is sometimes that just doesn't work out. But the bottom line is, yes, that rail crossing will be upgraded.
So what are the timetables, do you think, on those?
It would be in 2018.
Okay. So you have you gotten to the point where you've actually submitted those to the railroad?
Yes.
And you're just trying to find a date?
Things have been submitted. We're working still on some few. They actually end up designing that. There's still some things, I understand, with the Ferebee crossing on what type of rail arms will be used and some things like that. But we're getting much closer. But our goal is that in 2018, those will be upgraded. It'll be a little bit of a pain. I'm not going to mix words on that, because a lot of the other project will be moving along and almost done. I mean, our goal is still by, you know, in 2018 to have Sagamore Parkway done. And so we'll have to do some closures to make all of that work to get the railroad crossings done. But we're going to get them done, because they do, as the caller indicated, they absolutely need to be done. And but they are very expensive. And, you know, we end up paying for a lot of that. And you know, part of its timing.
It does sound like an upgrade, because a lot of those, if not all of them, do not have arms at the moment. It's just kind of lights and bells and things like that. So you're talking about things that would physically stop traffic rather than people just having to notice.
On the Ferebee one, there is for sure. I'd have to relook at the design to see if all three of those have how the warning devices are designed on all of those. But I know at least on some of them, yes, there will be some upgrades to the safety features as well.
Including ones that would be along 26 there? Do you think?
Well, the ones that are along 20, well, there's only one on 26.
Well, you've got the railroad tracks on either side of Sagamore Parkway by
yes,
Earl Avenue.
Yes, and I'd need to look at, I mean, I don't want to improperly speak, I'd need to look at the design of those two. I mean, those are going to be upgraded. I just don't know what level of upgrades are going to be, but they're definitely going to be upgraded.
A reminder that you can get your questions in to Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski for his answers today on Ask the Mayor here on WBAA. Call those in to 765-496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet those questions at WBAA News on Twitter. We've been out to a couple of announcements that the city has made in the last couple of months that have been sports related. We've talked about the redesign of Stadium. We've talked about the new softball park that you're putting in, and it made me think about a number of other cities in Indiana that have done that have put a lot of time and money into athletic tourism in the last couple of years. And I wonder if you think these are a push by Lafayette to try to get more people from the outside in to do athletic tourism, or is it really just to be a better home for the athletic teams that already reside here?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I don't want to hedge on your question there. You think I'm not answering, but I'll frame it in a way that I look at it. One, first and foremost, it is for our young people or our adults who are ever going to be using those facilities that live here in our community, that are going to use them every day for generations of people, to make sure that we have those quality of life amenities here that give people an opportunity to participate in different types of recreation. And like you said, recently with the baseball stadium and the girls softball complex, you know, but just on a smaller scale, we've just done some upgrades working with the disc golfers on some disc golf tees that are being put in. But with the two bigger projects, you know, first and foremost, it's for the people that live here and to attract people to move here. As we talk about economic development, those quality of life things, having those amenities are very important to people. And so first and foremost, it's for the people that live here and to attract people, quality of life, all those things we talk about. With that being said, the discussion has taken place that with the new multi-use baseball stadium at Loeb Stadium and the artificial turf, that we will be able to play a significant higher number of games in one day, and with some of our other fields, and that kind of maybe as a championship field too, some are really unique, that we should be able to attract tournaments that we can't host right now or that we haven't been able to get in the past, and that's certainly on our radar. That was not the driving decision between these two complexes, but certainly we're going to try to capitalize on those the best we can. And particularly with the girls' softball complex, you know, they've really not had the level of fields that they need and those opportunities. And it's been very difficult, if not impossible, to really have any significant tournaments here for them and bring people in from the outside. But that will change dramatically with this new complex where we have four regulation size fields, and one of those fields will be a champions field. It'll have some additional amenities on it for playing championship games of tournaments, just like you're discussing. And so by having those four fields all centrally located, having that champions field, that is going to open up an opportunity, and I know the Girls Softball Association is excited about what that might mean for bringing some of those tournaments to our community that we in the past have not had.
So I went a few years ago to down to Westfield to Grand Park as they were putting the finishing touches on it, and I wonder if you think you're talking about sort of two different levels competition.
Yeah,
in terms of economic development.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we could certainly level of competition, I think, could be the same, but it certainly won't be the same volume. And I mean, and I think we're sizing what we're doing appropriately for the geographical area that we're in. If you look at that area of Westfield, Carmel, Zionsville, Indianapolis, that metropolitan region, there's literally millions in the millions of people, right? So you have an opportunity to draw lots of people, lots of tournaments, different things like that. You know, we're situated a little bit different here. Obviously, we are a regional headquarters here in our community for healthcare, employment, entertainment, different things like that. And I think we are for recreation in our parks, and we can be for athletics. But I think we need to be realistic and use our dollars wisely on how many people we can actually draw here from how far away. And I think the things that we're doing are appropriate for our community and also responsible in the fact that you do have ongoing maintenance cost. You know, even the tournaments you put on are not, there are costs associated with those. And so I think we've done a good job finding that balance of looking at economic development, quality of life, taking care of our folks that are here, but yet not expanding or risking financial security of our community by stretching ourselves too thin.
You mentioned doing a lot of other little things like trying to upgrade disc golf holes. You've got a couple of disc golf courses around. Do you see other different athletic amenities that you're going to work on to try to make this a place that is thought of as a place where you can do a bunch of different athletic activities, even if you don't have the one huge thing like Grand Park?
Yeah, I mean, I think we do that overall as a community. You know, we're very blessed to be here with West Lafayette and Purdue University, where you also have other amenities that people can use. And West Lafayette is looking at things that they can do in West Lafayette with their parks and soccer fields and different things like that. And we continue to do that in how we look at baseball, softball, soccer, how we upgrade our parks, how we upgrade our trail systems, the disc golf that I mentioned, what the programs that we run through McAllister. And then I tie that back into the public-private partnerships that we have with the YMCA and the North End Community Center, who are both going to have some additional swimming opportunities down at the North End. We're going to have some additional soccer fields. We're actually going to have rooftop hockey, which is an amenity that we don't have.
You have to tell me what rooftop hockey
is. I agree with you. I'm going to have to see it, but it's in the plan. It's in the design. In fact, Pastor Vyers just challenged some city employees the other day in an email to maybe being one of the first teams to play on the new rooftop hockey that they'll have there at the North End Community Center. And so we'll continue to do that. I don't know that we're trying to become a sports mecca. I mean, I think, you know, we have a lot of fields at McCall. We have fields at Armstrong. They've run some smaller tournaments there, and we'll have these new fields, and we'll continue to do that in what I think is a reasonable, balanced way between expense, the value that we receive to it, making sure we can coordinate that with our teams, local teams that'll need to play on them, our schools that'll be playing on them, and different things like that. And find that balance. But long term, it's all about quality of life. It's about making Lafayette, West Lafayette, and Tippecanoe County a place where people want to live and work and raise their family, and so businesses will invest here. They know they can get the workforce here. You know, and that's really the long term goal. And then those extra tournaments and some things like that we can do certainly are an added benefit.
We've got a little less than 15 minutes left with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski on Ask the Mayor today here on WBAA. Get your questions to him by calling 496-1999, sending an email to ask@WBAA.org, or tweeting your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. We have not yet had a chance to chat with you about your first impressions of the first few weeks of actually having a needle exchange operating in Lafayette. I wanted to give you a chance to give us your thoughts on how that has gone so far.
Well, I haven't received any complaints about it at this point. I haven't received much feedback or any feedback, quite honestly, positively or negatively. And so I guess that's a good thing at this point. So, you know, hopefully some folks that need some help are getting some help. And at this point, there's, like I said, just really haven't had any feedback either way, but we'll closely keep an eye on it and closely stay in contact as that continues to move forward.
Any conversations at all with Jeremy Adler, the county health officer?
Not in the first couple weeks here. No, I haven't actually.
Okay. And I wonder if you are looking at whatever feedback you do get as a way of deciding whether you think a mobile exchange, which we understand the county has the ability to do if it wants to, would be something that should or shouldn't be done. Are you trying to gauge your feelings on that at all off of whatever the feedback is from the physical location?
No, not really. I think I've been pretty clear on that. I mean, I've always said that I could support a mobile system as long as it was, again, located in the right spot. And we've had a couple spots that we hoped worked out that I thought would be appropriate that it just hasn't worked out to get permission to do that yet, but we haven't given up on that. And so, you know, I don't know that I'm basing what the mobile unit might do off the fixed site, but I guess that's a fair question. In the fact that, you know, if we would start to find a lot of needles that we weren't finding before, whether it's fixed site or whether it's mobile site, that's certainly going to be a red flag for me. So from that standpoint, you're correct. That's a fair question that I would be watching that to help make that determination. But certainly at this point, you know, I feel like if we could find a mobile site that could be there a couple times a week that could that would work out well and we think's in the appropriate spot, I still support that.
But no evidence of that influx of needles yet?
No, not yet.
Okay. We I was looking over some of the agendas for the city and the county, and one of the ones that struck my eye was the city's Human Rights Commission. We've talked a lot with Mayor Barton in Crawfordsville over the last couple of years as he's tried to reconstitute his. And I noticed that Lafayette's has met once this year in January. And I wondered if you knew anything about why it had had just that one meeting, because it strikes me that it's either like people don't know that it exists to bring complaints to it, or I suppose the best possible outcome is there's no hate crime or question thereof that the commission would be looking into. Do you have any sense of why it was just the one meeting in January?
Well, I mean, as far as people knowing about the commission, I mean, all the commissions have been in existence for quite some time. But
sure.
You're absolutely correct. I have learned over the years that is no indication of how many people actually know about a commission or what's going on. But I mean, I think if you're asking me to speculate on that, I mean, the authority of the commissions is pretty defined and it's fairly limited. So the actions that they can take or the things that they can actually look into, again, as I said, are fairly limited. So it's possible that some types of complaints come in, but those have to be referred to Indianapolis or, you know, the Department of Labor or some other things where the commission really doesn't have any legal authority or statutory authority to actually investigate other than maybe at a cursory level. So my guess is that there's been some things that have probably come in that have had to be that those folks had to be given information and directed to the appropriate body that could actually take action or investigate in that. And then I guess I would hope that, you know, we are a welcoming community, not that everything's perfect by any stretch. I don't, you know, look at everything with rose-colored glasses, but hopefully from some of those standpoints that, you know, we don't have a lot of that taking place. And sometimes part of that referral process is back and just getting the business or wherever that conflict occurred and getting those parties together to sometimes be able just to be able to mediate solutions themselves. And that's also part of that, that process. But other than that, I don't have any other real information. I haven't heard any that, boy, we have all kinds of stuff or we don't have anything or people don't know that we're here. I guess right now we're just kind of in a period where things are going fairly well.
One of the reasons I looked at this was the state has talked and is talking again this year about looking at writing a hate crimes law. Indiana is one of a dozen or so states, I think, that does not have a hate crimes law. And I got to thinking about my conversations with Mayor Barton about Crawfordsville and then looking at this agenda. And I wondered, and I'm curious what your thoughts on this are, if Indiana does write a hate crimes law, do you think that these human rights commissions on the municipal level might be a good place to start looking at some of these complaints so that, as you say, they don't all get funneled down to Indianapolis and you have local actors who can talk about what happened in a local community that they might know a little bit better in case there is some sort of, you know, local vagary that might come into play?
Well, I guess my response to that would be it would depend significantly on the way the new law was structured and the wording. I mean, if it is actually a hate crimes law in statute, you know, in statute,
and obviously it's prosecutable
and has a criminal element to it, then, you know, those will probably be primarily directed through the police department. I mean, those would have to go through our normal law enforcement channels to be properly investigated. There could be evidence involved, obviously, in those types of crimes that would have to be handled. There could be court hearings. And so, you know, I don't know that those would be funneled actually into the Human Relations Commission. Now, if there was some lesser categories as part of the language in the bill that strengthened the actual authority of local commissions maybe to handle things up to a certain point before it actually reached that criminal break point, I guess, and where the police department would get involved, and then maybe they would. So a lot of it would be how it was structured, what that language said. But if it's actually a law and it's a crime, then, you know, that's not going to fall to a civilian body to be, you know, doing that investigation. That'll fall to professional investigators within the police department to put that, submit it to the prosecutor for review to see if criminal charges would be appropriate.
I'm not a lawyer and I was not a police officer like you were. Let me just throw one thing at the wall and see if
sure.
It sticks here. If you're talking about, a lot of times what happens in cases of discrimination or things like that is people are afraid to come forward because they're afraid of retribution from the community. Do you think it would be possible that human rights commissions would be able to be the ones who actually file charges on behalf of citizens in a community, and so therefore the case docket would be Human Rights Commission of Lafayette against John Doe, who allegedly did something to one of the citizens? Is that a way to use those human rights commissions as a shield so that people who want to bring these complaints don't have to put their name out there?
Well, again, you know, that would depend. I would see the commission more maybe playing an advocate role for potential victims of hate crimes to help them through the process. Maybe something, I just use an example, like a CASA worker helps someone, a child, through the court system. Allowing a civilian body like that to file on behalf of an individual, again, I'm not a lawyer either. I think that would be fairly unusual in the American judicial system. Obviously, at some point, anyone that's accused of the crime has a right to confront their accuser in a court of law. You know, there are judicial proceedings, constitutional decisions that govern a lot of that. And so I think that could possibly be a difficult transition there. But I could see the commission playing maybe a couple potential roles at a higher level than they play now. One would be a potential advocate for someone. They could fear retribution. I hope it wouldn't be from the entire community, but certainly there could be retribution from an individual or a segment. You and I both know that's a possibility. So they could work as advocates. Or if there were situations that didn't rise maybe to that criminal level or the police department didn't believe it reached, could the commission have a stronger authority, which would have to be in law to help mediate potential at a little bit stronger level? Could they level a fine, a real fine? Could they actually mediate with something that was binding that didn't have to go to the commission in Indianapolis? You know, those things I think could be looked at and discussed, which I think would be probably more appropriate and a better way to handle it than them actually filing charges on behalf of an individual.
Let's move on to other things in our last couple of minutes. When I moved here about 3.5 years ago, I saw a bunch of yard signs, even at that time, saying defeat the quarry, referring to the quarry that Rogers Group wants to build in Americus, which is, of course, you know, could be considered a suburb of Lafayette, I suppose, and as much as we have suburbs in this area. So now it seems that may all kind of come to a head at a meeting later this month. We may be nearing the point where we finally have decisions on this. I wonder, do you think your community has a stake in the outcome of that case?
Well, certainly we've been following it very closely, and we've met with the coalition members from the Buck Creek Quarry area that are fear of being affected. They've presented our city council. I've met with the Rogers groups because I feel it's important to listen to people on both sides to see what our what their ideas are and what their information is. I mean, we have probably had more of a concern. I kind of wear two hats from time to time as the mayor and also the president of the Wabash River Enhancement Corporation to make sure that nothing being done up there could somehow affect us downstream that could derail, hamper, or impede the progress that we're trying to make on the development of the urban core of the Wabash River here between Lafayette and West Lafayette. As you know, we're doing that pretty aggressively now. And so, you know, we're certainly keeping an eye on that. And then, you know, there's been some discussion about could that somehow impact, our water supply here in Lafayette. Our information that we have with our water department and the folks that help us is that they're so far away from each other that they wouldn't impact the Taze River in any way, which is where we get our water supply. But we're certainly monitoring the situation, and we're certainly, we do have some concerns. I want to phrase that appropriately. I mean, because people said it shouldn't affect this downstream. It shouldn't affect the water supply. But I mean to say that we still don't have some concerns in the back of our mind just to make sure that all that is correct. I would be remiss if I didn't say that we do.
Let me ask you one more thing real quick just our last minute, which is this is viewed as kind of an industrial community. It's a good place for people to locate if you're a business owner. And it strikes me there's a couple of different types of industry. I mean, there's the mining is one industry, but then if you look at what Nanshan and GE are bringing, that's a whole different type of industry. Do you think the outcome of the case and what they're allowed to do affects the way that this area is viewed industrially?
Well, I think you kind of answered the question for me. I mean, I think when you look at a mining operation such as that compared to advanced manufacturing that you have at Subaru, that you have at Caterpillar, that you have at GE and aerospace, that you have at Nanshan, it's many things you appropriately said. I think that's a whole different ball game, and I personally don't think that would have an effect on how the area is viewed.
Okay. Well, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. I look forward to doing it again next month.
Thanks, Dan.
And remember, you can tune in next week for our conversation with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarn. And you can find all of these programs archived at our website. That's WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.